want ancient history in addition.
Yes, we want ancient history edition. We're now on side two, Dick. So my next question would be with regard to your job. Is what did you see from the time you started and were head of the safety division and then the police force to when you retired? Is what sort of changes have taken place, both internal and external?
Well, first of all, the dimensions of the campus physically changed dramatically. There was a saying in the newspapers, at least, that the concrete never dried on the campus at Michigan State, and I think there's reason to believe that. And it hasn't changed. It's still growing by leaps and bounds. So that's change number one. Change number two, from an employer's standpoint, and I employed people to work in the operation that we had. We went from a group of potential employees who had military backgrounds to those who had none. And there's a difference in people that had some exposure to the military and then come into a quasi-military police operation like we had. Or I think law enforcement agencies are like that. So there's a completely different ball game with regard to the type of people that you're working with. And as an employer, you had to learn how to deal with one versus the other. Those are two changes that took place. I'll call it the rapidity or the continuing change of leaders that I reported to was a major situation that I confronted with. I didn't work for the same person.
No.
I worked for a variety of people, but fortunately never worked for a committee. I worked for benevolent dictators. and I don't care what level you're talking about, but that's the way it was. Those were two changes. There are things that I saw. The student body, of course, from 6,500 as an undergraduate to 16,000 when they came to work in 1950. The vast majority of whom were World War II vets, just like I was, with their wives and their children, to a, and I don't know what the ratio is now, but I'm sure there are far fewer married students today at Michigan State University, proportion-wise, than there were when I came here to work.
Mm-hmm.
I think those that were here when I came to work were strongly motivated. And of course, if you got a wife and one or two dependents, you better be motivated. And I think there's a story associated with that with one of my classmates. I'll be very specific. The fellow's name is Mark O'Donnell. Mark and I were freshmen together living in the same private home on Lewis Avenue in East Lansing back in 1939. And he was from Norway, Michigan. And Mark came here as a football player, and he was motivated by football. Mark enjoyed life, and Uncle Sam grabbed him in about 1941 in the first draft, and that's the last I saw Mark until I came back to work here in 1950. And one day I was walking through the Union Building early on, and at that time they had a display in the corridor called the Dean's List. And I'm looking at the Dean's List, and there's Mark O'Donnell's name. And I said to myself, wow. And subsequently, sometime later, I ran into Mark, and I said, what in the devil, Mark? What changed you? He said, a wife and two kids. Well, Mark went on to become the athletic director of Ovid Elsie school program, and he was a football coach over there for a while, but then became the athletic director. So I began to understand what a wife and two kids can do to an individual at least. But that's the sort of thing that I think I saw early on. You don't see that today because the students do not have that motivation of family to be here in school.
What sort of changes have you seen in the student body?
Well, that's one of them. I'll say this, they all look younger.
A lot younger. I know it got to me when I started realizing that we were employing students that are younger than my own kids. That's when I started realizing that it's changing.
Well, that's one of the things that I experienced when I was working. We have one son and who graduated from high school in 1968 during the Days of Rage. And if he ever came to me for advice, and I don't know that he did, but anyhow, I encouraged him to go away to school. I didn't want him to go to Michigan State College where I had the role that I had, because Tom had the capability of being a mischievous individual, and I didn't need that. Well, he went away for a year and disliked it intensely where he was, and decided he wanted to go to Ohio State, and I said, fine, the difference is that you're going to pay the out-of-state fees, and I'll continue to pay the Michigan State rate. And with that, he said, well, I think I'll go to Michigan State. So I had a boy in school during the period of 1968-69 till 72 when he graduated. And I had one eye open for where he was, and his mother had one ear open on the radio wondering where he was and where I was. And she said she could always picture him on one side of the street and me on the other. But as far as I know, he was totally outside the activities. So now he may be able to tell you things that I don't know, which is just as well.
It's probably just as well they stay that way, too.
I don't know if I've answered your question, but...
Yeah, I think you have.
One of the things that I enjoyed with regard to college students was that individually they're very unpredictable, and yet if you try to judge them by their hairdo or their dress, if you're old enough, or as you age, you can remember it's a cycle, and sooner or later it'll change. It's like the pendulum on a clock.
Mm-hmm.
It goes from right to left, but fortunately it goes back through center twice each time.
Give a little balance.
That's right. So okay. I can remember the so-called long hair days, and my total opposition with regard to what I thought it looked like. And I happened to think one day, you know, the first day I came home with a butch haircut, my mother cried. So that's the way things change.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little about Ralph. You mentioned when you first met him that he told you, that since he was in charge at the time, to go take a walk.
Yeah.
What else do you remember from your early days with Ralph?
Well, I got to know Ralph. Fortunately, because of the intimacy between where I was housed and where he was housed. First of all, in the steel classroom buildings across from the livestock pavilion. The faculty group of police administration in 1950 consisted of three people, Brandstatter, Turner, and Bob Scott. And Bob Scott and I were in the Army together. So he and I knew each other. I began to know Brandstatter because he's my boss, and I began to know Turner because he was part of the same building occupancy. And not a very formal relationship, but a good social relationship, if you will. The Brandstatters, the Turners, and the Burnetts played cards together, and we were socially integrated because we had kids, you know, about all the same age. And we babysat for the Brandstatters, and they babysat for us.
Can you? Yeah, we can just stop. Just make sure you unclip. We'll continue.
Sorry for the interruption.
No problem.
Okay.
So you were talking about...
We got to know each other, the Turner family, the Burnett family, grew up together, if you will, in this early marriage, small child atmosphere that we both had. And it was a long-term friendship.
When you came here, was Ralph still working on his alcohol experiments?
Not only was he working on it, I helped him.
Perhaps you'd like to detail that.
Well, Ralph was in the process of getting his master's degree, if I recall correctly, from a California institution.
USC.
And I don't know what the topic of it was, but as far as I'm concerned, it was free booze. And, Ralph would have a group of people come to the Quonsets and agree to drink alcoholic beverages in measured amounts to determine, I don't know what, but he knew what he was doing. And for this, he was subsidized, I think, by some of the distilleries. And so there were a variety of flavors you could utilize. And anyhow, he came to a group of us in the campus police department at that time and asked us if we participate. And I was one of the first volunteers. So ours had to do with a driving experiment. And it was done in the area which would now be directly east of the secret practice football field.
Mm-hmm.
It was a wide open area there. There was a railroad train engine sitting on the tracks, and they had cones out, and we drank measured fixed amounts of alcohol and then continued to drive in a series of time incidents. There were about six of us, if I recall. And subsequently, that particular experiment was detailed in the magazine section of the Detroit newspaper with pictures. And I got a copy of it downstairs in a footlocker of that issue. I became involved in that particular experiment. I know that one of my colleagues, who was also a member of the department, registered dead on the meter that Ralph had. And on the way home, he was driven home. We were all taken home by people who hadn't driven or drank. On the way home, he insisted to stop at Monty's and have another drink. I didn't go that route. He did.
He must have had a pretty good liver.
Yeah. Anyhow, yes, that was probably my first official relationship with Ralph, was in that capacity. But one of the things I remember about him, I had never seen this sign before, but in his laboratory in the Quonsets, he had this sign, "Mother isn't here, you put it away." And I've seen it subsequently many times, but that was the first time I saw it. I thought that was great. I don't know if you remember, he went to the Orient on some program, took his family with him, and in his absence, Joe Nickel was brought here to teach his program. And when Ralph came back, I concocted a little game to play against Joe Nickel, and Ralph acquiesced to becoming a part of it. So I wrote a letter to Joe Nickel, who now was the forensic scientist for the state of Illinois. He left here to do, stepped up in that program. In essence, the letter said, when you left, we had to clean up the laboratory, and we found an armed hand grenade among the debris in the room, and we were so taken by this, we had to call in the bomb squad from the state police to disarm it. And we think this is highly irregular for a person of your stature to do this sort of thing. And on the bottom, carbon copy, governor of the state of Illinois. I don't think it was 48 hours, the tone phone was ringing, it was Joe Nickel at the other end. He was screaming. Well, of course, there was no hand grenade. But here's Turner and Dick Burnett back in East Lansing laughing like the devil, you know, about the misery that Joe Nickel was going through. So that's the
he
sort of...
He probably never forgot that.
Nickel didn't.
No, he didn't. Did he ever speak to you again?
Well, no, but his daughter did, because she was a veterinarian here in the East Lansing area. So I think he survived. Maybe we hadn't. But I guess he wasn't so concerned about the letter. To him, it was a carbon copy.
He did, Governor.
So.
Was Ralph still working on the house when you first got to know him, or had he finished the first phase of the home out in Okemos?
I'll have to confess ignorance in that, because I think that I don't think there was any ever finishing. It's still going on.
That's true.
So
it was being worked out all the time. I knew him.
So that was an ongoing project. I think when we first knew them, they lived in the faculty bricks.
Okay.
And
yeah, I think it's 1950 actually when they moved, or 51 when they moved out.
Well then. The house had been started then.
Yes.
And as I say, it's never been finished. But
did you have any contact with Ralph in any type of a professional capacity as police chief, and him as any type of consultant for anything?
You probably don't know this, but in 1950 and up until 1956, when the Department of Public Safety came by, Ralph was a deputized member of the campus police. Now, if he ever performed any function for the campus police, I'm not aware of it. But he was a deputized member, because we were deputized by the Ingham County Sheriff at
right,
that time.
Right.
And he was part of that group. And we were only about 10 or 12. In that group at that time. It was a very small organization. But I don't know what Brandstetter was going to use him for as a debt, some crime scene investigator maybe, but anyhow.
Probably.
And then later on, when in Ralph's later years, and maybe even, no, he was still working, he became a expert witness for high-priced lawyers.
Oh, yeah.
As a forensic scientist, particularly ballistics.
Right.
And I was his gunman.
Okay.
I didn't know this, but I learned from Ralph that the carcass of a pig,
yes,
is very much like the carcass of a human being. So if a bullet is fired at the carcass of a pig, it does much the same thing that it does to a human being. And I was the gunman. I pulled the trigger in these, using a gun comparable to one in the crime that Ralph was involved in, theoretically exactly the same. Now, I didn't make those decisions. I was merely handed the gun and say, do this. So I shot a number of dead pigs for Ralph.
He used to talk about that at the table for lunch, whatever he'd be doing on something.
While you were eating,
yes,
his,
oh, yes,
pork.
Yes, exactly.
Because I think he inherited some of the pork. The attorneys that he worked for paid for that pig, but Ralph got to eat some of it.
Yes, that's exactly correct.
Pig died twice, once by a butcher's hands and once by mine.
Yeah. Any other sort of things that come to mind as far as Ralph?
Well, Ralph, as you may or may not know, was a very adventuresome type individual in a very odd way or peculiar way. Ralph Brandstetter and a number of colleagues in the campus used to go up to Brandstetter's father-in-law's hunting camp and party for a long weekend. And Ralph was very good at that. And Ralph always had some of his favorite beverages along. And I learned early on with some of the people that were part of that I was not in the same category as able to consume like they did. I tried it once and that was a mistake. I was not in the same league, but I learned that in the period of time that there were three people that I considered the best alcoholic consumers that I'd ever ran into. And don't try to keep up with them. But Ralph was not one of them. Ralph was not, I never saw Ralph intoxicated. But I learned to party with Ralph there. I learned that Ralph was an exotic eater, including such delicacies as raw hamburger.
Yes, yes.
And then he was a regular attendant at my muskrat dinners cooked here in this house. And I also watched Ralph quench his thirst with what was left in the pickle jar, the juice, and the hot pepper jar. And his gastric ability was outstanding. But we had some great philosophical discussions around that table here as the muskrat eaters got together once a year. And when I came back from Monroe with my muskrats,
he always used to tell us when he was going to the muskrat dinner. Do you remember when he was away in Vietnam with his family for about 2 years? And do you remember anything in particular when he came back after that?
Well, I told you about Joe Nickel.
Yeah, well.
That's one thing I'll never forget. But, we didn't have contact with him at that time, or with Arnella. I think one of the things that I noticed was that his children became more worldly wise, if you will. I think comparing those three kids against ours, they had a greater opportunity to see the world than Tom did, who was confined to the Lansing area. But Tom caught up with him because he joined the Navy and saw the world.
Yeah, that'll do it.
Yeah. But, I think that's the thing that I noticed probably more than anything else was the change in his children, who were no longer East Lansingites, if you will. They were citizens of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Ralph and Arnella intentionally did that to broaden their scope of outlook on life.
Ralph had a lot of contact with students and may continue those contacts. Did you ever get involved in any of that?
No, I did not. There may be an individual or two, if they were named, I could say, yes, I knew that individual, yeah. But not the relationship that they had with Ralph at all.
Did he ever talk to you about his involvement with the Baker Street Irregulars?
very casually. His Sherlock Holmes stint, if you will, was a topic of conversation, but never in depth as to I knew what was going on. I do know that he was involved with Earl Stanley Gardner.
Right.
And
Court of Last Resort.
Lemoyne Snyder and that group. He was very much involved with them. A group of people that I admire, hold sort of in high esteem. And Ralph among them tells you what I think about Ralph.
Right. Anything else you can think of you want to add at this point?
No, I just, I think one of the things about Ralph that will always remain with me is the story that I've been told about his prediction of how he wanted to die.
Yes.
And that's not my story, it's hearsay. But I thought it was tremendous. You probably have heard about it.
Yes, I have. About, yeah, he was talking to his neighbor, and they said something, and he said, well, guess if I had my choice, I'd want to die while I'm riding my tractor.
Yep. And he did.
And he sure did.
Yeah.
And I know from conversations with Arnella that the last thing he wanted was to ever have to be like in a hospital and have to, and he didn't want Arnella to see him when he died.
No. Well.
And he achieved all his ends.
He got out there in the back 40 and did it.
He sure did.
Yeah.
Well, he sure one sad day for me when I've been at a wedding of all things, some friends, and it was a really happy thing, and I was outside and I got this call and my wife said, there's a phone call for you, and it was Jay Siegel to let me know that Ralph had died.
You may not know this, but I had a heart attack in 1978.
Yeah, I remember.
And shortly after that, as I recall, Ralph had a physical examination and ended up having open heart surgery. And his son was so taken, Richard was so taken by the fact that his dad had this surgery that he went and had a physical examination and ended up having open heart surgery too.
That's right.
Because he felt that there were some inherited problems there.
Yeah, actually the family, particularly on the father's side, his father was early 50s when he died from a heart attack. And Ralph blamed me, by the way, for his heart attack.
He did?
He blamed me.
Well, I'm glad better to you than me.
Yeah.
Because there's some things I did.
Well, he had been, it was just after Christmas. It's still the Christmas season. And we had had a Christmas party, and we had had Ralph and Arnella over, and it was the first time they'd ever been to our house. And Ralph went home and proceeded to have his heart attack. And he always said that it was our fault that he had the heart attack. And it actually was years before he came to our house again. But when I told the story to Arnella, I got a very different reaction. She said, if there was anything that caused him to have the heart attack, it was the whole family was home for too long and he was under too much stress.
I was going to make a comment here and I forgot what my train of thought. Sorry.
That's okay.
Ralph always was never the center of activity, but he was always part of the activity and all those parties that we had, whether they were here or up north in Miles Walsh's camp, he was involved in some way, shape, or form. Bob Scott,
I
spoke of.
Knew him well.
Well, Bob would go on these trips and he would be painting. He would be doing watercolors. And the guy over here would be drinking his fifth drink and this guy over here would be drinking his second. And the rest of us might be going out to chase some deer illegally and all this sort of thing. But Bob was sitting there painting. It was a strange collection of people. Charlie Becker. I don't know if that name means it. Well, Charlie Becker was somebody that I fortunately never had to supervise. Charlie was a member of the campus police department when I got here. He was a detective lieutenant, and he and Branstetter had been in the Army together, and as I understand it, Charlie had been a shoe salesman in Flint before the war. Charlie was one of the best con men that I ever ran into. That's putting it politely. Charlie went to prison, ultimately, and I visited him in the Iowa State Penitentiary out at Iowa one time. Anyhow, Charlie went on one of these excursions, and Charlie was not an outdoors man. And we got out taking a walk in the woods, and there was deep snow, and Charlie got lost. He didn't know enough to follow his own tracks back.
Well, that's...
So... And Ralph was a part of that group. So, but I look upon my relationship with the Turner family as being a very positive aspect of my life. Ralph certainly, because of the numerous times we rubbed elbows together. Arnella, for what I respect, and a lady who speaks her mind, you don't have to guess what she's talking
not
about.
Not in the least.
And I always admire that in any person. This beating around the...